Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah.
But
don't you know we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns back here for another hour at Solartopia at the Green Power Wellness Show on PRN-FM. Thank you, crew in New York, and thank you to our great guest, David Swanson. David, you with us?
Hey, Harvey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm glad we finally got a time where we could accommodate you and your family. And we want to talk about a bunch of stuff with you. We got a full hour, and you are a great, great guest. The last time I saw you, you gave a spectacular performance talk at the Peace Center in Southern California in Los Angeles in Culver City. I want to say that the man who has funded that Peace Center, Aris Agnos, magnificent activist for decades, is a little bit under the weather, and we want to send him our best wishes. Aris, we hope you get well soon. You're a tremendous human being, a wonderful asset. You know, one of the great things, David, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, about being an activist who works for social change is that the people you meet are just the best people there are. I mean, people who are committed to social change, you put the needs and the interests of humankind as a whole ahead of their own. These are the people that really make the difference and are always of the best quality and the most interesting, the most fun. And Aris Agnos is certainly one of those people. And Aris, we hope you're doing well, and we send our best to you. And Davis, the same goes for you. You're a tremendously compelling speaker and writer. It's an honor to have you on, and we want to talk about one of the most, you and I have been activists for all our lives, and I have never seen anything approaching the pure theater of this insanity of Donald Trump with Vladimir Putin. I mean, if you were trying to invent this for the stage or screen, no one would believe it. I mean, don't you think?
Well, I'm not sure that I do believe it, and it may be that that we can have a little bit of a debate, which I think not what people who have televisions think of as debate, yelling and screaming and throwing objects, but actually a civilized debate, which I think make, and I've been having debates on the topic of war with pro-war advocates, I think make even better events than that terrific event that you were part of with me and Lila Garrett and too many great people to name at that press at that Peace Center in LA, which I have appreciated for years, and so I second your wishes that our supporter there gets well soon. But
right.
You know, I don't see the press conference that Trump and Putin did in the same through the same lens that most Americans do. So while I do find Trump to be outrageous and ludicrous and have found him so for decades, perhaps increasingly so in recent years and months, I'm not sure we're looking at the same thing.
Yeah, well, listen, I know there's a lot to talk about on this. I do want to say, you have been nominated consistently for this Nobel Prize. I do want to ask you, if you do get the Nobel Prize, would you do what Bob Dylan did and not show up, or are you going to go over there and get it?
I don't think there's the slightest chance in the world that I'm going to be given the Nobel Peace Prize. I think being nominated for it and receiving it are two different things, and deserving it is yet another thing. But I think that if I were to get the Nobel Peace Prize, I would take the award money, which is significant, and the money you can get from selling the physical object of the Nobel Peace Prize, which is dramatically more, and I would do with it what few, if any, recent Nobel Peace Prize recipients have done, and that is what the prize was created for by the last will and testament of Alfred Nobel, is to fund peace activism. Now, I've sort of gotten into this groove of condemning the behavior of the Nobel Committee, but this past year they actually gave the Nobel Peace Prize to someone I thought deserved it, and it
Who's
of course
that?
got far less media attention than previous years. I wonder why. But it was the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, I-C-A-N, which has moved 120-some countries to sign on to, and close to 60 countries now to ratify a treaty to ban the possession of nuclear weapons. This is what our friend Sam Husseini was trying to ask a question about when the protectors of freedom of the press, the Finnish authorities, brutalized him and dragged him out of the room before Trump and Putin walked in. He wanted to ask one or both of them about this global movement to ban nuclear weapons, about the existing treaty that their countries have been party to for decades, that commits them to quickly working to disarm from nuclear weapons. I mean, it's not even on the radar screen. Nobody else, of course, asked about it, although they asked about ludicrous falsehoods. And so I actually think the Nobel Committee deserves some credit, and perhaps all of those advocates who have been going after them for years, telling them to read Alfred Nobel's will and try complying with it for a change, deserve some credit for bringing the committee around to giving the prize to somebody deserving.
Well, let's talk about this incident, because, of course, except for what you have put out there, I haven't, and I know Sam Husseini, he's a great guy. And what happened exactly with him at the Trump-Putin summit there in Helsinki?
Oh, well, anybody can go and watch the whole thing on YouTube, and it was live on C-SPAN and CNN and everywhere else at the time yesterday. But the assembled journalists were in the fancy room for a long period of time, sitting around waiting, and somehow the authorities in charge there got word that Sam Husseini, who was there with press credentials from The Nation magazine, had a notebook size piece of paper with the words nuclear ban treaty or nuclear weapons ban treaty written on it. You can watch the video. You can see Sam's Facebook and Twitter. He's posted images of the piece of paper having survived, all wrinkled up. But they went after him, and they didn't ask him to put away the piece of paper. They didn't ask him what it was for. They didn't ask him if he had any plans to disrupt the event or was just hoping that someone would call on him to ask a question, which is what he says he was doing. They physically assaulted him and removed him and threw him in jail. People managed to get him out. He wasn't there long. No charges were brought against him. As far as I know, he's brought no charges against them. And to the credit of Democracy Now! And some other outlets, Sam has been on to tell his story of what happened. This was, you know, I guess some days ago now as this airs, but he wanted to ask the two countries, the leaders of the two countries that have over 90% of the nuclear weapons, the biggest resistors to all efforts to rid the world of nuclear weapons, what they were going to do about that, because he considered that more important than anything else that they could possibly talk about. And I agree with him. It was more important than anything they did talk about.
Wow, that's amazing. So they just threw him out on the possibility that he might ask this question that they didn't like?
I can't tell you their motivations. I've seen no official statements from anyone, but as you may know, the the nation of Finland, the city of Helsinki, was just covered with billboards welcoming Trump and Putin, I think in particular Trump, to the land of freedom of the press. These were ads taken out by the largest newspaper in Helsinki, advertising itself as, you know, an embodiment of freedom of the press and Finland as the land of freedom of the press, something that these two famous guests would find unusual and different. And so these were kind of pointed and snide, remarks in these giant billboards. And then what happens? The Finnish authorities drag a journalist out of a room of journalists for having a piece of paper, and he hadn't been holding it up and shouting. He hadn't had it out at all. It was, you know, in his stuff, but somebody had told them that he had this piece of paper, and he said, oh, sure, I do, and he took it out and showed it to them, and they grabbed him and hauled him away.
God, that's insane. That's unbelievable.
Well, and of course, the journalists filling the room didn't engage in any sort of creative, nonviolent resistance to this. They didn't try to stick up for him. They watched.
Unbelievable. That is unbelievable. I'll have to have Sam on to talk about that. That's an incredible incident. It didn't get anywhere. It should have been on the front page of the New York Times, of course, and it wasn't. So let's talk about this situation. Now, I have written a piece whose title goes something like, at the Trump-Putin summit, Fredo kisses every part of Don Corleone's anatomy. And I have put it up. I've gotten some amazing comments all over the map. Some people have totally loved it. Some people have totally accused me of promoting nuclear war. But my favorite comment came from a really good buddy of mine, Roy Morrison. And, of course, it refers to Fredo, who's a character in the Godfather movies, who's the idiot son of Don Corleone, played by Marlon Brando, and eventually Michael Corleone, the son, who becomes the Don ahead of Fredo. He's older than Fredo. Fredo's younger than him, and that's not supposed to happen. And played by Al Pacino, Fredo betrays the family, and Al Pacino has his brother killed. I'm not the first one by any stretch to refer to Don Corleone as Fredo. I've assumed, of course, that The Godfather is such a major piece of American culture that most people know who Don Corleone and Fredo is. But Bill Maher actually had a clip of Fredo on talking about how he was smart and he should have been the Don and all that stuff. So my point in dealing with this, and I'm going to jump ahead of you rudely as a guest because I know there's a lot here to talk about. My point in saying this is in no way, shape, or form to put down the idea that there should be peace with Russia and the United States. And in fact, I will agree, I'm going to presume you're going to agree with this statement that if Hillary Clinton was in the White House, we'd be way more likely to be at the brink of nuclear war with Russia than we certainly are with Trump. But there's a hidden story here in my world, which is that Trump and Putin are both mafia guys. And that one of the reasons Trump is so solicitous of this guy is that he's been feeding him a money laundering business for the last 30 years. So let's leave that on the table. And David, you can come to that eventually at the end of a soliloquy. But tell us what you think is the most important thing that has happened with Trump and Putin. And what do you think about all the furor and uproar that's come as a result of it?
Well, I have no problems with calling them mafiosi, with pointing out their actual literal connections to various criminals around the globe, or with calling them idiots. I do have a problem with claiming that Trump is Putin's servant and Putin is Trump's boss. If you look at Trump was just back from a meeting in Europe where he demanded more funding for NATO to protect the free world from the evil Russian menace. This is the same Trump who is selling weapons to Ukraine and pushing militarism throughout Eastern Europe beyond steps Obama was willing to take. This is the same Trump who's complaining that Germany is Russia's servant in his efforts to kill the pipeline to Germany that Russia sees as its, you know, big economic agenda, and Trump is, you know, attempting, probably futilely, but attempting to block. Trump and Putin stood together side by side and disagreed on important policy issues. Putin complained that Trump had torn up, U.S. Support for the Iran agreement, which Russia supported and sees as critically important and wants, kept in place. So then everybody screams, yes, but Trump never criticizes him. Trump never criticizes half the evil rulers of the globe. Find me where Trump has criticized Netanyahu or the king of Saudi Arabia or the fascist dictator of the Philippines or half the petty weapons customers across the planet, many of whom Trump has also not substantively opposed on policy in any way, unlike his behavior with regard to Russia. So this idea that, I mean, if I were Russia and Trump were my servant, I would be quite disappointed with his behavior, and I would find it rather, you know, sadly comical that half the people in his country thought he was my servant. I would much rather have him really be my servant, you know. And so I, where I'm in agreement with you is, despite the fact that I wouldn't pick Trump to be the president of the United States, I wouldn't pick anyone to have the sort of powers that have been given to the presidency of the United States, I wouldn't pick Putin to be the president of Russia, and so on. When Trump attacks and criticizes and insults and threatens the ruler of North Korea, everybody rightly condemns that and says, be a little diplomatic and friendly, for God's sake. It doesn't mean you have to like him or support him, but try not to start World War III. When Trump fails to insult and threaten and attack Vladimir Putin, everybody complains that he's not doing that, as if they want World War III. Explain that to me.
Oh, well, I can't, of course. But I do think that the financial ties between Putin and Trump. I mean, I don't think Trump will ever really defy Putin. I don't think the Iran agreement is all that important to him. The other things that you mentioned where he has – well, I think Trump's real mission at NATO was to just mess with Europe. He doesn't like Europe. He doesn't like the semi or pseudo democratic trappings of the European government. He doesn't like the European Union, and he whatever cover he's under, his mission should, if to the extent that he's capable of understanding a mission, was to really sow disruption in the European Union. And he also, of course, doesn't like Justin Trudeau, who's vaguely been elected and just completely screwed us on the pipeline situation. But, and as you point out, Trump is way more comfortable with dictators than he is with democracies. So I don't think he's really stepped over the line with Putin. I think there's a lot, and in terms of being Putin's servant, I think there are certain areas that Donald can go and disagree with Putin. But the core stuff, which is basically gas, oil, and nukes, they are in total agreement on, and there's a pretty clear path. And who knows what really happened behind the scenes? Donald is pretty unpredictable, obviously, but there had seemed to be a pretty clear agreement between Putin, Trump, and Tillerson from Exxon that they were going to divide up and really exploit the oil and gas reserves in Siberia, which are immense. And on oil and gas, and of course nuclear, Trump and Putin will never disagree, and that's where the money's at. And so, in that respect, and furthermore, whatever the dance they're playing, whatever kind of kabuki they're doing, clearly, and I don't know if you've read David K. Johnston's book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, which I actually had to put down. It was so depressing. God, but I've had David K. Johnston on the show. I've met him. And he's pretty clear. He's followed Trump
over the years. And I think it's really important and about time that people understand that Trump comes from a mafia household. His father, Fred, who was a horrible racist, and actually, featured, is the best I can do, in a song by Woody Guthrie, who names him by name as being a terrible writer. I mean, what a distinction in American history to be featured in a song by the great Woody Guthrie for being a racist. And he was Woody Guthrie's landlord, Fred Trump. Fred Trump poured concrete for buildings in New York, and he was a slumlord. And you don't do that in New York without an integrated, intimate relationship with the five families. And that's what Trump grew up in. And if you look at Trump's finances to the extent that we can without his tax returns, you know that he was consistently going bankrupt. And the only money he finally could get, dating from the 1980s, came from the Russian mob. And, you know, Eric Trump admitted as much at some press conference. He said, we don't use American banks. They won't have anything to do with this. But we are getting money from the Russian mob. And so all this talk, he didn't say the mob. He said from the Russians. All this talk about, an alleged tape of Donald being urinated on by prostitutes is ridiculous. I mean, maybe such a tape exists, but what really exists are the records, the financial records of the Russian mob supporting Donald, and that is Putin. And so I agree with you. Yes, they've had these disagreements in public, but I still think, and please give me your comments, that Putin owns Trump, not just because of an alleged blackmail tape, but financially. These guys go back 30 years. And so I'm grateful, and as are you, I'm sure, David, and you're the real leader on a lot of this, that they are not threatening each other with nuclear war, as I think would be going on if Hillary had been elected, had she taken the White House. But, this relationship really has to do, and as an environmentalist concerned with global warming, as you are as well, it has to do with oil, gas, and nukes. That's where the real key is. Not nuclear weapons, thankfully, but nuclear power plants and oil and gas. So what do you think about all that?
Well, Donald Trump is known and suspected of having dirty financial dealings in just about every nation on Earth. We have dozens and dozens of cases that are documented beyond dispute. In fact, Roots Action and Free Speech for People published and began promoting articles of impeachment around the Foreign Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, as well as the Domestic Emoluments Clause. And we've added a dozen other articles of impeachment in the past year and a half. We did that on day one, on Inauguration Day, because it was known with Trump coming into office what some of his financial corruption was. It's forbidden by the Constitution. It is cause for impeachment, has been from day one. But the parts of it that relate to Russia, which is all that anyone gives the slightest fig about, haven't been solidly proven yet. I don't doubt them. I don't, I'm not against investigating them. I want all of it exposed. But we have at rootsaction.org a draft of over a dozen articles of impeachment on this and many other topics, including collusion with a foreign government in the case of Israel, while he was president-elect, prior to becoming president, working against U.S. policy, illegal wars, incitement of racist violence, abuse of the pardon power, politicizing prosecutions. I mean, it's serious outrages that nobody could possibly care the slightest about because they don't have to do with Russia. And so when I look at this event and how it's been reacted to, going to the topic of financial corruption and ties to, dirty figures in the mafia in Russia, as in many other countries and many U.S. states, there is stuff to look at there, but it has nothing to do with the theft of an election, a topic that that you, Harvey, have done wonderful work on for many years, the thefts of elections. If we actually go and look at the report that came out, you know, January 17 from the CIA, FBI, NSA, claiming that Russia did something or other, it doesn't quite say what, to try to influence the U.S. election. I mean, this is the basis for all of these panicked, outraged screams of treason and Trump standing with our enemy rather than our troops. That is to say, the guys at the desks in Northern Virginia who write this stuff for the CIA are now elevated to sacred troop status, risking their lives to protect us from the evil Russian demon. I mean, this there's nothing in the report. There's nothing in it. It provides no evidence for anything and virtually no claims of anything. It doesn't claim anything related to helping WikiLeaks reveal that the DNC was slanting its primary against Bernie Sanders, which I'm glad we know, and it was important that we should know, and was a favor done to us by I don't know who. No claims that Trump was even involved in, you know, and even the endlessly repeated mantra that all of our intelligence agencies, this was what the Associated Press reporter said at that event on Monday, all of our, no, it was hand-picked, in James Clapper's words, hand-picked individuals from three agencies, and they could only get two of them to assess, that is, guess, with high confidence, the vague nonsense they were claiming. One of them wouldn't even do that. You know, so I'm waiting for evidence. And this bait and switch where we say, we will prove that we were attacked as on Pearl Harbor and 9/11 by the evil Russians who stole our election. There isn't even any claim that anything had any impact on the outcome of the election. Whereas I can point to a dozen features of our corrupt election and communication system that had major impacts on it, as I know you could. So, you know, to take that topic and then say, well, there are a bunch of financially corrupt Russians with financially corrupt ties to Donald Trump and his financially corrupt friends. Yeah, well, of course there are, but you have changed the subject, you know?
Yeah, that's true. We're talking with David Swanson from Roots Action, one of our great peace activists. I think the clearest of all our spokespeople against war itself. As a historian, David has really been very impressive in going back through history and examining why all our wars have been shams and unnecessary, to say the least, most provocatively on Pearl Harbor. I think, to me, David, it's of a piece. And, you know, I had the experience. In 1972, I was with a magazine called Sundance. We only had three issues, and they all of them in my archive at UMass. And the last issue we ran was must have been 10,000 words. It was a really long piece by an investigative reporter named Jeff Girth, who went on to write for the New York Times. I don't even know if Jeff Girth is still around, but laying out the extensive ties between Richard Nixon and organized crime. And, you know, I was editing this thing and we kept wondering if the doors were going to be broken down. We were all going to be gunned down like at St. Valentine's Day, but, and no one would pick up on it. And still no one picks up on it. But Nixon was, he was just a mafia guy. I mean, he was just, a made man. And, Trump is the same. And so, I think for me, in a world where Trump is a horrible cancerous tumor, the knowledge and the understanding of the depth of his ties to organized crime and how Putin relates to all that, I think it's important. I think we have to understand it. I, to a certain extent, I'm actually grateful for it in that we are not at this point in time on the brink of nuclear war with Russia, which I'm certain Hillary Clinton would have done to us. She was so awful. I have to say, you know, I wasn't thrilled with her. I thought she was, I was a candidate, this and that, and I knew a bit about her history, but my stomach never really turned totally on Hillary Clinton until I read her book that she wrote after called What Happened. I mean, my God, what a horrible, horrible person she was. And, you know, and all the other things. And I will also say that I did read, I don't know if you did, but I read Donna Brazile's book called Hack. And she doesn't have the goods on the Russians. But she does make one point very clear, which is, has to be made about the 2016 election, which is that Barack Obama, who was the ultimate ice skater and you know, just sailed through his 8 years and basically did nothing, well, did a lot of bad things. But among other things, he bankrupted the Democratic Party. And when it came time for 2016, as Donna Brazile, who would certainly know, points out, the Democratic Party was $20 million in debt, thanks to Barack Obama. And what Hillary Clinton did was she came in and she paid off the debt with probably out of spare change from her personal account and put the Democratic Party on an allowance. Anybody that doubts that the mainstream Democratic Party stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders, all you got to know is that Hillary owned it, literally owned the Democratic Party. Now, what the Russians' role was, you know, personally, I find it hard to believe that they didn't get involved, especially as payback from, you know, the CIA foisted Boris Yeltsin on the Russians. It was unforgivable. And I mean, don't you think, David, that they're, knowing, you've read our stuff, I mean, you know pretty much what I know about how shabby and rickety and vulnerable our election system was. I mean, don't you think it stands to reason that Russians would have jumped in at some point?
Well, I think it goes without saying that Russia does many of the things that the United States does routinely all over the world, including in Russia, including, as you note, back in the 90s, but more recently as well, all over the place. I mean, I've written about being approached by a Russian claims to be military and was military, but may also have been KGB, but an individual who tried to get me to, you know, publish under my name Russian propaganda, and I told him to go to hell and published his name and wrote about it. But, you know, Russia does many of the things that hostile nations do to each other, and that hostility needs to be ended. I think it is important for people in the United States to understand that nothing Russia has been accused of compares to what the United States does in this field and many related fields all over the world. Doesn't excuse it, but puts it into that context of what the United States does to other people's elections. I think we should also understand that not only did Hillary Clinton financially own the Democratic Party, but she was financially owned by those people and corporations and foreign nations that funded her family foundation. And so for people whose concern, you know, in the current moment seems to be not so much that Republicans are, you know, getting secret documents in research against their opponents, but that they might be getting them from Russians, that, you know, anything tied to foreigners is, you know, evil. Even bribery becomes evil when it's tied to foreigners. You know, this was the story of Hillary Clinton as well, who, yes, of course, would have been a disastrous president as well. But, you know, when we say that Trump is in the mafia because he just seems like he's in the mafia, you know, maybe my problem is I haven't seen the evidence yet, but I have this quaint old, you know, notion that I'd like to see the evidence, not because I see much of a, you know, much redeeming humanity in Donald Trump, but I wouldn't call, I don't think, I mean, I know it's tempting and I've probably done it, but I don't think we should call human beings, you know, cancerous tumors. I mean, there are people in this country, the vast majority of them, in fact, who support violence, and they listen sometimes to good radio shows. And so I think that when, you know, Donald Trump, you know, says black and white as he's campaigning, he's pro-war and he's anti-war, he wants to, you know, kill their families and bomb the hell out of them, and he's against foreign interventions and nation building and so forth, we should look to the money. And where is he on money? He wants more military spending than ever before, even than the record set by Barack Obama, and he's getting it, and both parties are giving it to him. He wants more money from NATO members. You know, I don't care so much that he insults them and, you know, blurts out the obvious truth that NATO is obsolete. He wants and gets more weapons money out of them. But when he does something good on Korea or on Russia, even when most of what he's doing good on Korea is reversing his previous disastrous hostility, we have to encourage those things, even though it's Donald Trump, sadly, just as we would have encouraged good things even though it was Barack Obama or George W. Bush. I can't write him off as a cancerous tumor, because sadly he's the king of this country. He's the royal president of the United States, who's been given incredible powers. And if we can nudge him to use them a little bit less disastrously, even while demanding that Congress impeach and remove him, that's what we got to do.
Good. All right. Well, being who I am, I do occasionally jump over the line. So I'll say he's not a cancerous tumor. He is a human being who behaves like one. Maybe we can put it that way. One of the things he's also done, which is of interest to me, is, and you've commented on this also, he now wants to weaponize space. And he's talking about a space. He originally came up with Space Force, which I guess is now part of the Air Force. And then they changed it to the Space Guard, which wants to, I guess, emulate the National Guard. And this is in violation of one of the few treaties of which the human race can be really proud, which is the 1967 treaty that was signed during the Vietnam War, amazingly enough, to preserve space and not weaponize space. Now, I don't know if he's explicitly denounced that treaty, but he has come forward with his usual bluster and wants to set up a weaponization of space. Have you followed that at all?
Absolutely. It's critically important. And again, Putin brought it up to the crowd of journalists in Helsinki, standing 3 feet away from Donald Trump, that he wants to ban weapons from space and the United States won't. Even though the United States is run by his little pet servant poodle, Donald Trump, the United States won't. I mean, he's the worst servant I've ever seen. I would fire a servant like him in a minute. And the fact is that Russia and China and their nations of the world, apart from the United States, have been wanting a stronger treaty to ban all types of weapons from space for decades now, and the United States has been the holdout. And I think there's something really slick and insidious about the propaganda technique in that naming of it Space Force or Space Guard, because it makes it sound as if it's people. Nobody is proposing to send people into space, little armed soldiers into space. They're proposing to put weapons into space. And so the Space Force or the Space Guard is made up of weapons makers. So now weapons makers, like, CIA propagandists, get to have that status of being our troops, our sacred, death-defying, brave, courageous troops who risk their lives to protect us, in this case from Martians or whatever. But it's put forward as if we're going to have to think of it as a group of the holy troops, when it's nothing other than weapons dealers, war profiteers off weaponry, a career that used to be shameful, less than a century ago in the United States. So the propaganda has really been put to work, and I think we could focus on that problem, you know, and even on the fact that, that Russia and many other countries are on the right side of it and the United States is not, were it not for the fact that our airwaves have been completely taken over by Russophobia, by a new Cold War, to the point where, you know, even I, who for the past year and a half have been, you know, saying we must impeach and remove Trump, I don't care how evil Mike Pence is. Yes, I've heard of Mike Pence. I know how evil he is, but I'm talking about a transformed country in which people can be impeached. Don't you get it? And no one has listened, of course. But now we're at the point where I'm afraid that if Mike Pence moves into the White House, his first move is going to be to, you know, to reassure the liberals by bombing Russia. And even if he doesn't, and even if Nancy Pelosi succeeds in protecting Trump from impeachment, the Democrats are going to be campaigning against each other for who can be more hawkish toward Russia. And so there's not a good mechanism now to make things better. The only way to make things better is to change everyone's minds. And I don't own a television network.
That's unfortunate. We're talking with David Swanson, the great peace activist based in Charlottesville, Virginia. I do want to say that, you know, my focus through all this has always been on the money. And part of it is because of my history with that piece on Nixon. But I think that it's very important that we get under the surface here. I don't know what Mike Pence would do, I am glad that at least Trump is not, you know, taking us to war with Russia. I think it's because of the money, and it's important to me to get under the surface here so that people finally see the financial connections. And, I have been told, I have serious discussions with people who think that the number one agenda item that the Russians had, however they may or may not have been involved in this election, was for Trump to raise gas prices. Because, you know, Russia has had its share of, and Putin have had their share of economic difficulties. And the entire Russian economy goes up or down based on the price of oil and gas. And that's why Tillerson was there. And Tillerson apparently just couldn't cut it personally with the Donald, which speaks, there may actually be things in life more important than money. And you got the guy from Exxon brought into the administration to smooth the money trail, and he can't take it after a while. I'd love to get the inside story out of it. I mean, he called Trump a moron on the record, for God's sake. And this is the guy that was supposed to cut the deal between Trump and Putin to divide up Siberia. So to me, it's important to emphasize this underworld connection between the two of them, because it's important that people understand how deep the money really goes in determining the direction of our government, both in Russia and the United States and all over the world, frankly. And go ahead, David. Yeah, jump in on that, please.
Well, I want to believe it when I see it. I don't dispute that it's possible, that it's plausible. I just like to see actual evidence. When Russia was making stronger economic ties with Ukraine, the United States went in and helped orchestrate a coup and took care of that situation. But even there, Obama would never go as far as Trump has willingly gone in sending weaponry into Ukraine. The Russian press depicts, you know, getting this pipeline into Europe as their big agenda, and Trump is doing everything he can to stop it. Is it really less important than they let on? Is Trump really not trying hard to stop it? Why do these big disagreements sort of get overlooked by the Trump is working for Putin story?
That's a fair question, I don't have a ready answer. So there may be, you know, you also with Trump, we enter the realm of the irrational and insane, and you have to question if the guy really knows what he's doing. But we'll see about that. I also was very interested in his attack on Germany, and claiming that the Germans are dependent on the Russians,
when in fact Germany is going in exactly the opposite direction to 100% renewable energy. And, you know, we're finding all over the world now, the Koch, especially in the United States, of course, the Koch brothers, and I'm not clear on their relationship to Trump and to Putin, but the Koch brothers, the big oil and gas guys here, are doing everything in their power to stop renewable energy, shutting down windmills, you know, opposing renewables. There's a single line in the Ohio state code that has prevented $4 billion worth of wind development in northern Ohio. And, of course, Trump is trying to bail out with Rick Perry the entire coal, oil, and nuke industry and gas industry in this country, what I call King Kong. So a lot of it does have to do with energy. A lot of it's subterranean, and a lot of it we don't understand. But and then it's, of course, moved into outer space, which is quite amazing. I mean, I think the world is a more nuanced place than many of us understand. But my agenda has been to really expose these mafia ties, which I think are very real, and I think would shock the country and the world, frankly. I mean, David K. Johnston, to my understanding, and you may want to read his book if you haven't already, and of course he's been attacked as being a mole for this and that. You get that now on the internet all the time. It has followed Trump for 30 years, and he says basically that, look, this guy could not have existed. He could not have survived his many bankruptcies without Russian cash. And the Russian cash goes straight to Putin. And so you're right to point out these inconsistencies. But that seems to be the way the world is now.
Well, you know, if that case could be made to the satisfaction of anyone in the Democratic Party or the slightly left of center establishment in Washington, D.C., I think it should be immediately. And if impeachment were ever going to be used again for something other than sex, it would be. I don't know what's preventing that. But I think, you know, Trump and Putin and their governments are on the wrong side, are leading the wrong side on environmental survival. And what are we, the enlightened humans of the world who would like the planet to continue doing? You know, we're demanding that Trump swear allegiance to his good intelligence community rather than the evil demon foreign monster Vladimir Putin. I mean, this is the wrong agenda, even if there were evidence for it. You know, we've got to be looking at these countries. I mean, Russia is far smaller and far less aggressive and far less militaristic, and has been slashing military spending rather than increasing it. And, you know, but these two countries are very much on the wrong side of the big issues, including nuclear weapons. And we all ought to be united against the pair of them and a handful of others that are with them, rather than trying to pit them against each other, because when they get in a fight, we all die. And when they get left to continue with the status quo without serious interruption, we all die a little more slowly.
Right. But the other thing, the other dimension, David, is I find, as having looked at these election situations for, you know, 18 years now, I think that the discussion of whether the Russians hacked our election, I think they did some. I think there's evidence to indicate they tried to go. And I don't care about them, whoever it was releasing papers from the Democrats. I think that's wonderful. If it was the Russians, I would thank them. That's fine with me. There is some evidence that they did attempt to penetrate some voter rolls. And then now you're getting into the nitty-gritty. And so I do welcome, to a certain extent, this discussion, except it has to move away from the Russians, about how hackable our election system really is. If these guys sitting in the Kremlin can hack into voter rolls, and I think it was in Illinois that they're accused of having done it. But the fact is that Kris Kobach, Secretary of State of Kansas, John Houston of Ohio, the governors of Michigan, Wisconsin in particular, guys really loathsome Rick Scott in Florida. These people clearly were involved in messing with our election system. So the byproduct, I mean, you're worried about Mike Pence, which is an unknown. The byproduct of this discussion of whether the Russians hacked our election is that our election, people are understanding our electoral system is hackable. And that, to
right.
me, is a good discussion. Whether the Russians did it or not, I think they did some. I think there was limited there, but they did do it. And, of course, that's what we've been doing since the 1890s, at least. That's an important discussion to have. I'm not happy that it focuses on the Russians. On the other hand, I am happy that there is a discussion that shows how hackable our election system
yeah,
really is.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, as you've been pointing out for at least the past 15 years or so, we've got election systems that are completely unverifiable and completely open to manipulation. And, you know, who has the most interest and has been the greatest suspects in such possible manipulations over the past 15 years or so? It's parties within the United States with an interest in those elections. And, you know, and these are election systems not just corrupt in that way, but corrupted by the corporate media, corrupted by secret money, dark money, most of it from within the United States, as far as we know, by barriers to getting names on the ballots and into debates, by the voter ID laws, by the partisanship and the partisan gerrymandering of the districts, by the Electoral College. Trump literally lost the majority of votes, and nobody even talks about reforming that problem because they're so focused on the Russians. I mean, this is an election system, the pristine sanctity of which could not possibly have been violated by anyone. You know, it just didn't exist.
Yeah, it's
if anyone in Russia did anything to try to impact a U.S. election, and particularly if anyone were ever to start to claim that they actually did impact any U.S. election, I would consider it outrageous in the same way that I consider the U.S. doing that all the time to other countries outrageous. But that's not where I would start even with reforming the U.S. election system.
Right. But I think it's important that, you know, those of us on the left who always seem to wind up in a circular firing squad, you know, those of us who are concerned about the mafia ties between or the financial ties between Trump and Putin, we're not trying to start a new Cold War. It's important people understand the role that underworld money plays in our politics. And this certainly dates to Nixon. I don't really have another president beyond Nixon that was clearly tied to the mob. But Trump is. There's absolutely no doubt about it, and it has to come out. It's important people understand that. And Putin is a part of that. And so, you know, pointing that out does not mean that we need to have a new Cold War. It just means that, look, these two guys are mobsters, and Trump has been through X number of bankruptcies, and he couldn't be still floating, which he is, without Russian mob money. And the same thing, you know, okay, our electronic system, our system of voting in this country is completely a shambles. The Russians were among the many, and, you know, they probably had to get in line, who did take a shot at hacking it. I think they did, but that's not my concern. My concern is that the system itself is so completely screwed that, you know, so if people are angry at the Russians for hacking our system, at least they're talking about our system being hackable. If people are concerned about us yelling that Trump and Putin have underworld financial ties, it's not that we want a new Cold War. It's we want the underworld financial ties to be dealt with. And so that's important.
Well, I don't think for a minute that you want a new Cold War, Harvey, and of course I don't. But and we put together this letter last week in the Nation magazine, RootsAction.org, where I work, where we got a lot of people who are you know, full core supporters, believers in Russiagate, who, you know, found common ground with us and said we don't want a new Cold War. But the impact of what we're hearing on CNN and MSNBC and Fox is pushing a new Cold War, and it seems to me that preventing that and moving us back from the edge of nuclear apocalypse has to be near the top of our agenda.
I 100% agree with that. It's terrific. I just hope that in all the dialogue, that to me what's really important is, A, we have a hackable system, which has to change, a hackable electoral system. And you know, again, the Russians have been,
right.
This whole Russia insanity does seem to be sort of a wedge into getting that discussed. And B, that that mob money and money in general is at the core of this problem. And oil and gas and money is a key to it. I mean, you know, Russia and Trump have oil and gas ties, which are extremely important to expose. And it was so perfect that Trump chose to scream at Germany at the NATO meeting without mentioning that they're going completely renewable. And that's critical. And he ignored that, of course, because that's the threat that they fear the most. You know,
yeah.
It's not nuclear
yeah.
war that Trump and Putin fear the most. It's renewable energy. That's the ultimate a boogeyman for them. And that we're seeing with the Koch brothers all over the United States. I mean, there is a very serious war which Trump is leading against renewable energy. Oh, my God, we're done. David, it's an honor to talk to you as always. We'll talk again soon. Keep up your great work.
You too. Thanks, Harry.
And we'll be in touch. Take care.
Either way,
thanks, Harry.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're going to have a solar-topia, solar-topia, solar-topia.